also welcome to the Executive Director of IPED and his team, as well as representatives from the Civilian Secretariat. Also welcome to media, civil society. You're welcome at the Portfolio Committee. Honourable members, just to, in terms of our program, we've got a full program, so we need to be efficient this morning. We're first going to deal with the first quarterly of IPED. After that, we're going to deal with the first quarterly of the Civilian Secretariat. Then we've still got those two reports to adopt. I think we're on page 18 of 28. So I'll just ask members that we adopt that report, and then also the KZN oversight report must be adopted this morning. And then, members, the final item would be the program for the next term. I've yesterday indicated already what our game plan is in terms of that first week, but I mean we will in detail bring the program to you and also take any suggestions of issues that we must address. So we want to move efficiently this morning. I'm going to ask the honourable members to introduce themselves, and I'll ask the executive director to introduce his team. Honourable Mula, we can start with you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Phindile Mola, a member of this portfolio committee. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Jerome Marke, a member of this committee.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning. My name is Akele Mbele, member of the committee.
Hello, I'm Diane Kola Barnard, member of the committee.
Thank you very much. We will then ask the Executive Director, Mr. McBride, to introduce his team.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable members. I'll start from my right-hand side, our head of legal, Marianne Morwasi, and next to her is the national spokesperson, Mr. Moses Lamini. Next to him is the head of national investigations, Mr. Matthew Sesoko, and the acting CFO is next, Mr. Patrick Tsetseri, and next to him is the stakeholder management and compliance monitoring, Ma'am Momodisha Malope, and next to her is Ma'am Susan Letlape from the governance and evaluation. And on my right-hand side here is Ma'am Nomposi Nitsianda, who is the head of administration. And I am Robert McBride, executive director. On my left is Anthony Tumpako, the chief of staff of my office. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. To the Executive Director, without further ado, we're going to ask IPED to introduce their presentation. Thank you.
Thanks, Honourable Chairperson. Just some background. We started the financial year with severe budgetary constraints and a serious problem of about $24 million in accruals. So the year started off with the bank and the hole in the already reduced budget, and a lot of the expenditure in the first quarter, the cost drivers there would be accruals from the previous financial year. As a result, we've engaged with Treasury, the Ministry, and SEPs, and a number of trilaterals have been held with the SEPs has given an undertaking to share resources with us, and our view is that it would not affect our independence at all, even if we do some training courses together and make use of their facilities, and they provide some equipment for us, which will save us on budget. The SEPs have also agreed for the MTF period starting from 18-19 to defer some of the budget, an amount of roughly about $50 million per year, working out to about $160 million for the MTA period, which would help us keep our heads above the water. As you would notice from the performance as we go through it, on expenditure, we are over there's expenditure over the projected amount, mainly due to accruals. We we've also, as a result of the budgetary constraints, we've also strategically switched the focus of investigations to more high-impact investigations, and Program 2 will speak more on that. In terms of the IFED Act, which must be finalized in this financial year, the initial phase is completed. We are now working together with civilian secretaries on amendments. I think that we are still on track for next month for public comments, but that I'm sure civilian secretary could speak more on. Okay, Honorable Chairperson, I'll hand over now to the acting CFO to give his input, and you will hand over to the presenters who follow. Thank you, sir.
Okay, thanks, Executive Director, and good morning once more, Honorable Members. I'm going to take you through the financial position of the IPIT. My presentation will cover the following areas: summary of budget allocations as well as an expenditure, limited budget allocation impact, internal budget control measures, cost pressure areas, as well as additional fund requested from SAPS. Lastly, the preliminary expenditure for August, just to give members a current status.
Just CFO, we appreciate the additional information, but remember the focus is first quarter. First quarter. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Chairperson. The budget allocation trend. Our current budget allocation is 242 million. It was increased from last financial year, which was 1617 to 255 million. The budget growth is only 5.1%, which translates to 13 million in monetary value. This growth has been viewed as insignificant as compared to what is required, particularly considering the accruals that were carried over from the last financial year. The current allocation does not cover the annual inflation growth, which is 6.2%. The contractual obligations, annual escalation fees, which range from 5 to 10% per annum, regulated annual wage increment, which was at 7.2%. So these are the areas that were not fully covered by the current budget allocations. The next slide, Chairperson and the members, is a summary of our first quarter. If we have to be measured on our first quarter budget allocations, by now the Program 1 administration is at 133%, which is 33% over. Program 2, Investigation and Information Management, 109%, which is 9% over. Compliance and Monitoring Stakeholder is the only program that is still within the quarterly budget. With regard to economic classifications, the compensation of employees is still within the target for the quarter. Goods and services is the one that has been severely affected by accruals, is 189%, which is 89% over during the target. The transfer payment is still within, and capital asset is still within. All in all, for the first quarter, April to June, our budget has been exceeded in terms of expenditure by 16.9%, and mainly due to the accruals as the acting ADS, the ADS fully audited. The next slide, summary of budget and actual expenditure for first quarter, April to June. This is the annual allocations. So we are giving expenditure against the annual budget allocations. For Program 1, 33%. Program 2, Investigation and Management, 27% actual expenditure. Compliance and Monitoring is within the 25% target. In terms of the economic classifications, as indicated in the previous slide, compensation of employees is still within. Goods and services is outside the expected target. Transfer payments is still within. Capital assets is also still within. So if we are measured against 25% of the quota, we are at 29%, which is 4.2% above the target. The next slide is your graph that shows the expenditure per program, just the movement. The following slide, Chairperson and the members, is your economic classifications, how we performed. As we are known, our budget, the main of our budget is in compensation of employees, where the number of employees are. Goods and services, the budget is 32 million for the whole financial year. We are sitting at 54% against 25%. Transfer payments, there was no spending in the first quarter. This is the money that we normally transfer to SACITA, so the money has been transferred in the second quarter. Capital assets, by the first quarter, according to the procurement plan, the procurement was not made. The movement started in the second quarter. So the main cost drivers, Chairperson and the members, is information communication technology, including the annual software licenses. The audit cost, as well as the office accommodations, particularly considering the annual escalation that were not accommodated. In terms of the budget and expenditure per program, investigation and information management, compensation of employees, they're still within. This is where the bulk of our budget is. Due to the number of investigators, however, they were still within by 23% against 25%. Goods and services, they are at 41.2%. This is also where the accruals were experienced. Transfer payments, 30% of the 13,000. In total, the program was sitting by at 27% by end of June. The main cost drivers in this program are as follows: travel and accommodation for investigators, which are not enough budgeted for due to the insufficient allocations. Legal costs, including the settlement of court orders, which some were not predicted. Maintenance of G-fleet vehicles, including the crime scene vehicles that are used by investigators. Communications, which includes your 3G for registration of cases, in most cases when the investigators are outside the offices. The last program, which is program 3, compliance, monitoring and stakeholder management. In terms of their compensation of employees, they are still within at 22% against 25%. Goods and services, they have exceeded their expected target. They are sitting at 44% against 25%. Overall, the program is sitting at 24% against the 25%. Their main cost driver is traveling during their community outreach programs, as well as the communication and marketing of the organization. Limited budget allocation impact. Chairperson, our budget allocations has not been increased as required over the MTF period, and as a result, it has accumulated an accruals for almost 3 previous financial years, due to the fact that our contractual obligations are not sufficiently budgeted for. We've got various offices with the service level agreement or the contracts that consist of the escalations from 5% to 10%. And if our budget is increased below this percentage, it will then mean we need to carry over some of the invoices that were supposed to be paid. And as a result, in 2014-15, we reported 5.3 million of accruals, which was increased in 2015-16 to 6.8, and in 2016-17, it was increased substantially to 24.3 million which was an opening balance for the current financial year 17-18. Internal measures in place to monitor the limited allocations, as much as we have opened with then accruals, which is which result into deficit in the current financial year. The department has put some few internal control measures in order to survive. We have continued to engage various stakeholders for interventions in efforts to secure additional funding. Various submissions were forwarded to the Minister of Police for his support on the engagement with SAPS regarding the funding assistance, as well as sharing of resources, as the ED has alluded to. Reprioritization of funds has been considered during the current adjustment budget, which resulted into a 9 million being moved to compensation of employees from compensation of employees to goods and services in order to relieve the pressure that have been reported. Management has taken also a strategic decision to have a regular bi-weekly budget control committee meetings for monitoring of spending trends, reprioritizations, as well as making recommendation to the executive director on how we can survive within the limited allocations. Lastly, strategic planning and HR units have also been making presentation in all BCC meetings on the actual performance and the vacancy rate respectively, so that we can be able to measure our performance as well as our expenditure. The next slide, this is just cost pressure areas that we considered when we were in our trilateral engagement with SAFS and National Treasury. We are saying if SAFS allocate this money, we were expecting to have the money from the current financial year. However, nothing has been confirmed for current financial year to relieve the current pressures. We are hoping that there will be a communication with regard to that. In terms of the MTF from 18-19, there's an allocations and the breakdown is given there on that slide.
CFO, just a question. So on, in terms of slide 13, will that probably be part of the October adjustments?
If it's approved, but with the current information that we received yesterday, only 9 million, our internal shiftings has been considered with regard to the assistance from SAPS. The feedback has not been given.
So 9 of the 55?
9 million is our own internal shifting. Oh, okay. So nothing additional has been given.
Okay, Chairperson, next slide, I'm not going to go deeper. We're just giving you the current information with regard to expenditure. We are currently sitting at 45% against the 41% in August. Thanks, Chairperson. That is the last slide.
Thank you, CFO.
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members. I will be taking us through slide 15 and slide 16 of our performance information. On the first slide, slide 15, this is a table which represents our performance per program on the implementation of the APP targets. That will be our program performance indicators. And for program one, we have a total of four targets, and all of the four targets, they are on track. And two of these targets, they don't have quarterly targets, they only have annual targets. However, based on the performance for the period under review, the performance is on track towards the attainment of the annual targets. And that will be the vacancy rate and also the implementation of the internal audit plan. And for Program 2, Investigations and Information Management, we have a total of 15 targets. And out of those 15, only four targets are on track. And that translates to only 27% of our targets that are on track. And the ones that are on that are not on track, it's mainly targets on investigations of our cases on different classifications. And what attributed to the underperformance
it's due to the high number of the backlog cases that we found ourselves starting the year having to carry over from the previous financial year, because each and every case that was registered in the previous financial year, from the 1st of April of the new financial year, they are classified as backlog. So as we remember that in the last quarter of the previous financial year, we had to slow down operations and prioritize cases due to budgetary constraints. So that also had an adverse impact on our performance, because we found ourselves having a high number of workload. And also the other reason is the ineffectiveness of our case management system, which the investigators, they have to work on during the investigations. So when they conduct investigations, they also have to work on the system to update the progress that is being made on investigations. And the other reason it can be attributed to the outstanding technical reports, which delays the process of finalizing the cases. And on legal services, we have a total number of 7 targets, and all of them, they are annual targets. We don't have quarterly targets. However, during the period under review, on all matters that were received, none of them was finalized within the set time frames. However, they were finalized, but the challenge was that they were not finalized within the set time frames, because they are indicators, they've got set time frames. If, for example, they have to finalize legal opinions, it has to be finalized within a specific time frame. So that was the contributing factor to the underperformance. And raising being the constraint capacity within the program. And for program 4, compliance, monitoring and stakeholder management, we have a total of 3 targets, and only 1 target is on track. That is stakeholder engagement at national office, and the community outreach and stakeholder management at provincial offices. They were not achieved during the period under review. So in total, we have a total of 30 targets, and out of those, it's only 10 that were on track during the period under review. The next slide, slide 16. This is the strategic targets on the achievement of our strategic indicators. We have a total of 5 strategic targets, and the first one for program 1 is number of strategic training areas undertaken as per IPIT's training, and the target is on track towards the attainment of the annual target. The training plan has been approved, and 4 training areas have been undertaken during quarter 1, and coordination has commenced for the outstanding training areas. And for the number of investigators trained on specialized services as per the training plan, that is for program 2, the annual target has been achieved by end of quarter 1. 100 investigators received training on investigation and management of cyber and electronic crimes, and the second training was on Celebrite, and the last one was on forensic investigations. And the second strategic target for program 2 is percentage of decision-ready cases completed from total cases received. And the target is on track. We were on 14% by the end of the first quarter, which is 228 cases that were finalized out of the 1,620. 1,620, it represents the cases that were registered in the current financial year. And the next strategic target is under program 3, is the percentage of legal advice provided to investigators from the total request received. And this for this target, we have not received any requests during the period under review since the indicator is demand-driven. So in that case, there was no legal advice that was provided to investigators. However, there has been a support that the program has been providing on cases, high-profile cases that were being investigated during the period under review. And the last one is for Program 4, which is the percentage implementation of integrated community and stakeholder engagement strategy. The strategy has been approved during the period under review, and the implementation has commenced. So we'll continue to monitor the implementation of the action plans in order to ensure that the target, the annual target, is achieved by the end of the financial year. I will then hand over to the program manager to cover some of the issues that were not covered on my presentation. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. I am representing Program 1, which is administration. We had four indicators for this quarter under review. Vacancy rate, we had targeted to keep it under 10%. At the end of the first quarter, it was at 6%. The percentage of implementation of annual internal audit plan, as it has been reported, our implementation plan was approved by the audit committee, and the process has commenced to implement those action plans and audits. A number of reports on risk maturity level produced. We are on track. On track, we did produce a report on the first quarter, and a number of performance reports on implementation of APP submitted to National Treasury DPME within the stipulated time frame. We are on track with all our indicators. We manage to keep them on track, and we project that by the end of the financial year, everything will be achieved. Thank you. Over to Program 2.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson and Honorable Member. Thank you, Chairperson and Honorable Members. In respect of Program 2, I'll take you through the targets for Program 2. With regard to the first target of percentage of cases registered and allocated within 72 hours, we are on track in terms of progress. We are at 82% on a target of 78%. On the number of fiscal reports, on investigations generated, we are also on track. One report has already been completed. On percentage of investigation of death in custody, that is decision rate, we are at 19%, that is 55%. As already indicated by my colleague in strategy, the issues that impede on our meeting the targets there, it's issues relating to backlogs, the case management system. We have recently lost our programmer who was given a better offer in the private sector. We're still trying to attract a new programmer to assist us with our case management system. And also issues relating to, which the CFO has alluded to, relating to our old ICT infrastructure affects the ability of our case management system to work effectively, and therefore affects our ability to complete cases on the system timeously. and of course issues relating to technical reports, which take time from the Department of Health and Forensic Laboratories. With regard to death in police custody, we're at 3%. Similar reasons are applicable there also. Investigation of discharge of official firearm were at 18%. Mainly there is issues relating to backlog. On the percentage of rape, it's similar reasons as alluded to in death cases. Also with regard to rape in police custody, it's similar reasons also obtained there. With regard to percentage of investigation of torture at decision ready, similar reasons are also applicable there. We have not achieved our target. Percentage of investigation of assault, we are still also struggling there. We are currently at 15% on a target of 45%, and mainly there it's the issues relating to backlog and the issue of the system, our database system. A percentage of investigation of corruption that are decision ready, we are at 16%. Also there, similar reasons relating to backlog as well as our system. And percentage of investigation of other criminal matters, we are also still struggling there. The percentage is still low at 4% against the target of 45%. And this is also affected by the fact that we have to prioritize our investigation based on the budget constraints that we experience. Number of systemic corruption, this is an annual target, and we will monitor the attainment of that target. Percentage of backlog decision ready cases completed, they were on target, and we'll monitor the attainment of that. Percentage of backlog, percentage of dockets referred to the NPA, we are on track there. Within 30 days of sign off, we are on track there. We are at 91% against the target of 75%, as well as percentage of additional recommendation reports referred to the South African Police Services, we are at 95% against the target of 75%. Chairperson, just added a slide there relating to convictions. We indicated the convictions that criminal convictions that we've had in this quarter. Different provinces had different convictions. I will not go through the detail of all of them. Yes, just a correction on the Free State one common assault there. The as a correction there, the sentence there is 3 months, or the one relating to Free State Springfontein common assault. The conviction or the sentence there is 3 months or 3,000 fine. As well as the next slide, on slide 22, it's on Mpumalanga King Rose. The person was charged for murder but was convicted on culpable homicide. That is why the sentence there is 5 years imprisonment, suspended for 5 years, and declared unfit to possess a firearm. And then we also indicated departmental convictions, and we illustrated them 6 dismissals from SAPS, 6 suspensions, 6 corrective counseling, 3 fine, 1 reprimand, 8 verbal warning, 4 final written warning, and 23 written warning. And then we also added a slide on negative and positive recommendations, and we indicate a total of 133 negative recommendations, as well as 361 positive recommendations from the different provinces. With regard to...
Sorry, Chair. Can I just get clarity from Mr. Sissoko what the meaning of a negative recommendation and a positive recommendation is?
Thank you, Honourable Mbele. Mr. Sissoko. Okay, thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honourable Mbele. The negative recommendation is where we make recommendation that disciplinary action must be taken against members. Positive recommendation is where we found that there was no misconduct on the part of the members concerned. And then we also indicate the feedback on disciplinary action, awaiting disciplinaries. It's 115 initiated, 1 guilty, 7 not guilty, 7. And then we have negative recommendations by MPS. We only have 3. 2 awaiting response, 1 not guilty. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Mr. Sopo. Welcome.
Morning, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members. I will be taking you through Program 3, which is Legal Services. As has been indicated by my colleague, Ms. Letlape, the performance indicators for Program 3 are 7. They are all annual targets. None of them are quarterly targets. But unfortunately, Legal Services was unable to achieve the targets as set out in the performance indicators. I will take you through each one of them and indicate the reasoning behind the non-attainment of the targets. The percentage of written legal opinions provided to the department within 21 days of request. It is an annual target of 90%. We did receive requests therein. They were finalized, but not within the given 21 days that they were supposed to be finalized in. The percentage of contracts that are finalized within 30 working days of request as well, they were received, but unfortunately, we were unable to achieve or return those requests within the 30 days that we were given to do so. The percentage of civil and labor litigation matters that we have processed, we were also unable to process those within the set days. The percentage of arbitration dispute matters attended within the regulated time frames, we also processed and finalized some, but not within the given time frames. The reason that is given in these particular 4 performance indicators were that Legal Services has been undercapacitated as a result of frozen posts and other vacancies in the program. The outstanding 3 indicators, which were the percentage of oral legal advice provided to investigators within 24 hours of request and also within 48 hours of request, and also the percentage of the prior requests that are finalized within 30 days. The first 2 indicators, Chair and Honourable Members, although we indicate that there were no requests that came in through this particular quarter, there was an extensive work that was done by the program in rendering legal guidance and support to Program 2 on the high-profile cases that were being investigated. So perhaps they were not noted as oral or written legal advice, but there was extensive work that was done by Program 3 in terms of supporting Program 2 in the investigations and the litigation that has been going on. In terms of the prior requests that were received, unfortunately there, it was a matter where we had received 22 requests, and out of the 23 requests, and out of the 23 requests, we were unable to meet the one request, provide the information within the requisite 30 days. So unfortunately, that one we missed by just one. That would be my presentation. Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson, Honourable Members. In terms of performance for Program 4, we had 3 targets to report on for the quarter. Out of the 3 targets, only 1 was achieved, which are the formal engagements at national level. For their formal engagements at provincial level and the community outreach events, targets could not be reached. Thank you.
Thanks, Honourable Chairperson. So in the light of the shift in emphasis by the department as a result of the budgetary constraints, we've had to have a trade-off between performance in some areas and making impact in others, and that's probably the main reason for the underperformance in some areas. And it was a situation of being between the devil and the deep blue sea. We are hopeful that the trilateral engagement with IPED, National Treasury, and SEPs will bear fruit, and also that the in-year relief might also be received. And we are hoping to finalize by next month with Civilian Secretariat the amendments to the IPED Act. Thank you, Honourable Chairperson.
Thank you to the Executive Director and his team. Also welcome to the Secretary of Police, Mr. Apia. Hopefully before tea we will meet with you. Members, I'm going to allow three questions for the first round, but let's keep it concise, short. We've got a long program. The first three from my side. Firstly, I just want to get an indication in terms of the input from the CFO. If the 55 million is not included in Minister Gigaba's red book in October, how are you going to prioritize that 9 million from your shiftings in terms of that list? I just want to get an indication. Secondly, a question to the Executive Director. A critical vacancy is the position of CFO. It's quite important for the portfolio committee. Financial performance of departments is critical. I just want to get an indication. What is your planning in terms of that? And then the third question, during our oversight visit to KZN, to the provincial office, although it was short, we picked up there was 5 cases relating to Cleveland's that's currently carried by IPED, maybe just in terms of the progress, but also we also met with civil society activists during the visit. There were some concerns on certain cases from Mr. Haas and Ms. Berger. I just want to get an indication, is there a concerted effort also from IPED National to address those concerns? Honourable Mula.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for your presentation. My first question, will you please indicate why spending on goods and services was higher than planned, and how will this impact on the service delivery ability on directorate? My second question, in slide 15, number of investigators trained on specialized services as per the training plan. When was the last training? My third question, in slide 16, this one was in slide 16. In slide 15, 4 targets were achieved. What about the other 11 targets that were not achieved? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you.
In program 2, investigations and information management. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Mula. Honourable Market.
Thank you, Chairperson. On slide number 4, bullet point number 4, the growth does not fully cover the expected annual increases in the following areas. I was just wondering if somebody says not fully, what does that actually mean? Wouldn't it be better to say something more than that? It's very general. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honourable Marke, Honourable Bija, Honourable Mulabatsi.
Thank you, Chairperson. My first question, are you going to reinstate the legal services program in 2018/19. My second one, tell us about your engagement with the National Treasury for alternative funding in the 2018 MTEF budget. My last one, your acting CFO position, when will it cease to be an acting post? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Molabatsi. Honourable Mushlongo.
On page 13, I would like to know the stage of the IP Act. How far is at what stage is it right now? And also, does that amendment also carry into account the question of the court ruling regarding independence of IPED? Then lastly, my concern is about when it comes to page 24, particularly with regard to cases related to KZN, seemingly the very, very low figures there. What could be the possibility? Is it because maybe of ineffectiveness of IPED in the province of KwaZulu-Natal in ensuring that it investigate complaints? My other questions have been carried, taken care of by you, Chairperson. Thanks.
I get an additional one at the end. Thank you. Honourable Bailey.
Thank you, Chair. I'm covered on the aspects of allegations of ineffectiveness at the KZN office by yourself and Honourable Mhlongo. So my second question relates to slide 26 in terms of the feedback from SAPS and the Metro Police Services. I recall that when we received the Section 9N reports from IPED, I raised a concern around a role that spoke to the fact that there was no response from SAPS on a number of cases that were referred to them. So no response as to whether the SAPS had finalized their disciplinary action, as to whether there had been an outcome or whether there had been any initiated. I don't see any indication of there being no response from the SAPS on any of those cases. So I just want to get clarity, is that no longer a problem? Are we getting comprehensive feedback from the SAPS on all cases referred to them? Or is that not the total picture reflected in slide 26? And then my last question is just to raise very briefly the issue that was in the public spotlight recently about the assault allegations against the ED. Obviously, the point of concern they raise is against how they may impact on the reputation of the department. And certainly the strong suggestion is that they are a smear campaign aimed at undermining the IPRED reputation, and that's an agenda I'm very aware is on the offing. So I'd just like to get a clarity statement or a response from the ED as to what's his perspective, where he sees this coming from, what it means, and what the positioning and response of the IPRED is to that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Bailey. Honourable Kola Barnard.
Thank you, Chair. It really is too utterly bizarre that you have to go to the Minister of Police to look for additional funding from the very people you do oversight over, the very people who you arrest, and you have to go to them cap in hand. I mean, it's a bizarre situation, and I'm looking at the Secretariat here. They really need to intervene. I'm very uncomfortable with IPED having to go to the Minister and beg for money. It's just, to me, it's wrong on every level. And you should never be put in that position. But the IPED, look, you've come under intense spending pressures over the last 2 years, especially with the growth of the accruals. The Treasury is in a tizz about it. So in a couple of concise sentences, what have you done in terms of seeking alternative options for addressing these pressures? I mean, have you reworked your service delivery model, eradicated the efficiencies, the things that the Treasury have asked you to do? Secondly, I'm really concerned at your project cost analysis that is inadequate. It may be that this is the key, and that's resulting in the problems we're seeing. So what have you done to address that? And finally, really the growing accruals. They're emanating from contractual obligations. Now, you haven't been able to absorb the full cost of the contracts. They're going up much faster than your budget. Why did you enter into them in the first place, in that surely someone here with all these financial brains noticed that you wouldn't be able to afford them? Was this from, did you inherit this problem, or did you leap in with open eyes yourselves? Who are we pointing the finger at here?
Right, thank you. That is the questions. Maybe just an additional one from my side. Maybe if we can just get a short, concise report on the high-profile cases. I think we had the last presentation, the committee, or IPED came to, there was an indication. If we can just also get the high-profile cases, just feedback. Thank you. Executive Director, over to you and your team.
Thanks, Honourable Chairperson. I'll start with the last three questions first. With Honourable Mbele's question about the assault allegations that were in the media, and I'll deal with the budgetary issues from Honourable Kola Barnard, and then the program managers will take over in numerical order from program 1 to 4 in responding to questions that were sent that were directed towards their area. I think firstly is to note that the complainants in the case specifically have taken the initiative to withdraw the charges and have made a statement of withdrawal. They have also requested alternative dispute resolution and a preliminary agreement in the interest of the minor child was signed. And the matter is now before the prosecutor with all relevant information, and I hope that the matter can be brought to conclusion rather speedily. In terms of the agreement, I cannot go into detail on it. It's confidential, but that's basically the status as I'm speaking to you now. And then on the issue of the budget raised, I think the key issue with IPED from a high-level strategic position is when IPED was envisaged and the Act was changed and IPED translated from ICD to IPED, all aspects of its operation could not have been envisaged ahead of time, what problems it will run into. And my assessment is that whilst the intention was a correct one to set up IPED and have it going, as IPED gathered speed, if you recall the first 2 years of its existence, there was underspending. And that's because the department hadn't even stood on its feet yet, hadn't started walking, was still crawling. And as a result of that, the projection was incorrectly made that they don't require as much as they should have. So issues of related to internal controls and accounting and checks and balances are minimal. And that's why we run some of the risks for misstatement of information, wrong information, and so on. There are key areas in line with the IPED Act. For example, the collection, storage, and safekeeping of information and exhibits, which we don't have at all, which we run a great risk of. That doesn't require just a register in a room. It requires a system of exhibit collection and safekeeping and storage, which we haven't even begun to look at. Then is the issue of ballistics training, ballistics analysis, and reports. And this is in line with what Fulham Commission said, pronouncements, and also the Constitutional Court on the judgment that these are essential elements for operational and structural independence. The operational structural independence, as far as specific units and the issues of accounting and reporting and controls within a department, it's my view that it was never adequately envisaged or budgeted for. And that's where some of the problems lie. Also, if you look at the ratios between the population that IPED must deal with and compared to what SAPS has to deal with, you will see we're completely on the back foot, and you sort of remain a back foot. The Auditor General has also indicated that as a going concern, if the underfunding continues, they'll have to put into question whether IPED is will continue to be a going concern at this stage. So the issue is we've been changing the wheel while the car has been moving. That's in essence the story of IPED. Honourable Chairperson, I'll hand over to Program 1 and then we'll move up to Program 4. Thank you.
Thank you, Program 1.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members. With regards to the filling of the position of the CFO, the position was advertised and we received applications. However, the way IPED is structured, the position of the CFO is at level 14. And in terms of public service regulation, a chairperson of the recruiting committee must be of a higher grade than the position that is being recruited. And we must also have a person who is an expert within the panel. And that person must be at least equal grade of the position that is being recruited. So our CFO position is the highest finance person within IPED, meaning we had to go outside. We tried to use our program manager as the chairperson because the CFO falls under the program of which some of the activities under CFO the program manager must report on. So we were using that. But when we checked the definition of the grading in terms of the public service regulation, it's clear. It's a grading. It should be it's a salary level. The program manager is the same level now with the CFO. So we had to go outside. We've approached a number of people. People at the higher level are very busy. They did they did commit to assist us. But when the dates for shortlisting came, they would cancel and say, we're going to Parliament. We've got these engagements that we cannot. So we are busy trying to get somebody who's committed to assist us. Exactly. So that's the problem that we are facing currently. But we are considering a number of options, including approaching DPSA to assist maybe with the deviation in that regard, because our executive director cannot sit in the panel because he must approve in terms of good practice. He cannot sit on the panel and then approve the appointment as well. So we are trying. People at that level, they're very busy. They want to assist us, but when the time comes for them to commit, they're unable to come to IPED and sit the whole day shortlisting and come again and sit the whole day interviewing candidates. So we are trying our best to get the position filled. According the question from Honorable Muller, when was the last training for investigators conducted? All training programs that have been reported were conducted within the first quarter that started in April, ended in June. The training were forensic investigation, celebrate training, investigation, and management of cyber and electronic crimes. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Chairperson, Honourable Members. The first question from the Chairperson was with regard to the adjustment budget as well as the assistance from SAPS. Chairperson and Honourable Members, we had a trilateral meeting with SAPS and National Treasury with the understanding and the commitment was made in the same meeting that the assistance will start from the current financial year. And we were expecting the allocation to be made before the finalization of the adjustment budget so that it can be considered. However, like I've indicated, we've been making follow-ups with SAPS and National Treasury in order to make sure that they meet the deadline. However, it was not met, and we are not hoping for any assistance in the current financial year on a basis that the adjustment period has already been almost finalized. Like I've indicated earlier on, yesterday we received the allocation letter. There's nothing that has been indicated on that allocation letter from SAPS, which means we might not be able to get that allocations. The second question, why goods and services was higher?
Sorry, CFO, maybe just the second part of my question, the 9 million. I mean, in the end, you're not going to get anything, it seems, but that 9 million in terms of your shiftings, where are you going to prioritize that? Thanks.
Thanks, Chairperson. The 9 million was identified from the the vacant funded funded post in the current financial year. And what happened is that we have looked into the areas that were pressurized. Some of the areas were litigations, traveling for investigators, as well as some of the contractual obligations. So that's where the 9 million will be prioritized, although it's not going to assist for the entire period of the financial year. It's only partially going to address those issues. Basically, we have considered invoices that were on hand to focus on them. With regard to why higher expenditure on goods and services, why we spend what we don't have, the answer here is that the commitments that are here are not the new commitments. Existing commitments that were done on various contractual obligations, security, cleaning, as well as the office accommodations. Some of the contract period ranges from 3 years to 9 years, particularly for your office accommodations. So they are existing. They are contracts that we cannot cancel due to lack of funding. The unfortunate part is that these contracts, they've got an annual escalations, as I indicated, from 5% to 10%. So you have to make provision, increase budget for this contractual obligation each and every financial year. However, when you looked at our budget, it's not making provision for such escalations, and hence we end up having the accruals. The Honorable Marcus question, growth not fully covered. It also talks to the same issue of contractual obligations. We've indicated that our growth in the current financial year, our budget moved from 242 million to 255 million, which clearly means it has been increased by only 13 million. So we're saying when you looked at that growth of 13 million, it's translated to 5.1%. But our CPI was projected to 6.2, which clearly means you've got 1.1% less than what you were supposed to receive in terms of the allocation. So hence we said not fully, because if it was fully covered, we were expecting at least a 6.2% increase. And then with regard to program three, we have engagement with National Treasury. In the first place, they had a problem with restatement of program three. However, they end up giving an approval with conditions. Some of the condition one is that we need to revisit our targets as well as our indicators for that program, and we must make sure that there's a sufficient allocation for that program. And the approval was that the program will be reinstated with effect from 2019-20. So by next financial year, 18-19, will still be operating with three programs. With regard to our engagement with National Treasury on our 19-20 budget, we had a number of engagement with National Treasury. On the 24th of July, we had a police service technical group. On the 31st July, we had a peace security budget group where all management from IPID were participating. And the only positive from those meetings is that we are now depending on assistance from SAPS. There was nothing additional that was presented from National Treasury. They've indicated to us that the only assistance will be the one that we have presented. That will be coming from SAPS as the form, in the form of the assistance. Costing model from Honorable Konabarat. We have a very convincing costing model which we have shared with National Treasury. We are costing per head on everything that we are doing, and we always try to do a zero budgeting so that we attach each and every cent to the activity. And we believe that this is the costing model that can assist, especially taking into consideration the environment that we are facing. And it's something that has helped in the past. The contractual obligations existing, why these contractual obligations commitments and why they are existing, they've been existing since the beginning of this department, most of them. Your office accommodation, I've given an example earlier on, as well as some of the securities. What we have done is that some of the contractual obligations that are within our control, like your renting of the photocopier machine, we have since tried to not renew so that we can be able to accommodate those that are existing. Like I've indicated, some of them for office accommodation are from 3 years to 9 years, so we cannot terminate them now. We have to wait for them to be terminated, and the department has also made a proposal to reduce some of the regional offices, satellite offices. By doing that, we cannot do it now. We have to wait for contracts to come to an end, and the decision will be taken on which ones, and that will also assist in releasing some of the commitments that have been made.
The Honourable Kolobana, follow up.
Just for clarity about the building that you stay in, is it a public works building that you're paying public works these huge amounts that they're pushing up and up and up, even though really... So I'm seeing nodding heads. So it is a public works building, and they're now charging you these huge amounts, which I'm guessing don't relate in any way to the rentals paid to other buildings. Is it not possible you can just buy a building?
Program 1, Mushifa, thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member. We have approached DPW to request that we get out of that process where they must do the procurement on our behalf. But in terms of Government Immovable Asset Management Act, they are the custodian of that act, and they are supposed to procure all government buildings on behalf of the client department. And we wanted to approach National Treasury. However, National Treasury wanted DPW to concur with the request that we were making, and DPW was not prepared to assist in that regard and insisted that they want to assist us. As a result, we are still stuck in the building where the courts have nullified the contract that we are currently having between DPW and the landlord. We've been trying, the tender process will go. I am personally part of the procurement process within DPW because we were trying to avoid the situations where we're getting long contracts with high escalations that we cannot afford, and so on. So that we can, when we do the specifications, it must be done at my level at least, so that we can even negotiate the escalation fees and so on. But we would work, and when the process is at the end, it will be restarted again. There will be some little technicality. The tender will have to be re-advertised. Currently, we requested the deviation from National Treasury to approach the landlords now with the buildings that meet the specifications that we have as the department. National Treasury agreed. DPW is in the process now of engaging those landlords. They did engage them. The landlords submitted them the documents, but when we were at the final stage again, there was one landlord who did not submit one page, and in terms of the supply chain process, they are not allowed to go back because on the terms and conditions, the person must submit everything. So we had to start again the process. Currently, I'm waiting for DPW again. I saw Mr. Labandu this morning at the breakfast in the hotel where we at, and I had a chat with him, and he just smiled at me, and yeah, that was it. So we are sitting with that situation currently.
Thank you for that. Yes, Honourable Kalabona.
Question to you. Am I correct that you said the other day that we were going to ask DPW to come here to speak to certain matters? And if they are, could I ask that this one be put on the top of the agenda? It's been going on for as long as I've been in Parliament.
Yeah, I think in terms of the draft program that we're going to present, hopefully before 1 o'clock, it's the 24th of October. But, we can also add IPED. It's, of course, SAPS and also the problems currently with DPCI's contracts as well. So we can add that. Let's get the other responses. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson and members. With regard to the... With regard to the question on the Cleveland matters, Chairperson, I think it's important that I put these matters in perspective. Firstly, the issues arose as a result of the Morana Commission. The Morana Commission is looking at the political killings in KZN. In terms of the investigations that IPED is seized with, from the information we have in terms of the investigations, none of them are linked to the political killings as per the terms of reference of the Morana Commission. It was unfortunate that these issues came there and then cast aspersions on the provincial office of IPED. We have engaged with the commission, and of course there was also a member of IPED who went to testify. Yes? We have engaged with the commission so as to deal with the issues that have been raised there. We're still waiting for a date where we would appear to deal with the issues and put proper perspective. Largely the issues that have been raised in our view is that it's lack of understanding of the work that we do, not only on the part of our employee who went to testify, but also on the part of the NGOs who testified there. For instance, one of the issues that was raised was the issue of a murder case, which it is alleged that the office is dysfunctional because it's taking too long to conclude that matter. But when we intervened and looked at, and I personally went and looked at that specific docket, you find that there was proper investigation in that matter, and that there are two reports from a government pathologist as well as a private pathologist who conducted a postmortem on that matter. And their conclusion was that they cannot conclude that the cause of death was as a result of the torture, as alleged. However, they recommended that a toxicology examination must be done to determine what could be other reasons that led to the death of the deceased. Now, that report is still outstanding. And those that operate in our environment will understand that we've had serious problems in getting these expert reports. I mean, some of these reports take up to 4 years. before we get there, you know. We have engaged not only ourselves, but the NPA to try and fast-track this report. As I'm reporting, we still have not received the report. There is only one specific matter where we acknowledge that there was a delay. It's an assault matter, where there was a delay in the finalization of that matter, because the investigator concerned was attending court in Gauteng. His basic case then was attending court in Gauteng, which take a number of time, I think more than 2 months to conclude. So he was involved in that. So there was a delay in that. But as a speech chairperson, all the matters relating to that have been forwarded to the DPP and we're waiting decisions on that matter. And I'm confident as I sit here that they've been dealt with as they should. The issue relating to the low number of recommendations from the that specific province.
Sorry, Mr. Sokol, just the second part of my question. The issue of civil society, you know, we interacted with some of this groups. I just wanted the relationship between the KZN office and those independent monitors, is that on a sound footing? That's quite important because Mrs. Daas and Berger, they raised issues. So I just want to know, from the national perspective, are you confident that that relationship is sound? Thank you.
Chairperson, as far as we're concerned, the relationship is sound because there is feedback that goes to them. The issue is when there is a difference in opinion on how the issues should be dealt with. For instance, they would insist on a particular approach, but for an investigative point of view, we cannot accede to that kind of an approach. And that causes some sort of consternations on the parties. But we must understand that as an investigative body, we must do our investigations as per our own standard operating procedures and follow the law. So they may have a particular position on how things should be done. We may not necessarily agree with that. And that is where sometimes the conflicts come, you know. But as far as we concerned, and we also looked at the correspondences between the parties from our office to them, there has been correspondences, you know. What has been an issue is with regard to, for instance, where our office would want to contact specific witnesses, but they had to go through them because they couldn't be allowed direct access to these witnesses, which in itself also causes some delay in getting our matters concluded timely. But we have taken a decision that we'll also engage with them so that we deal with those issues.
Director, and then Honorable Mshlongu as well with a follow-up on the issue. Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. I think just as a follow-up, I think Mr. Sosoko has been diplomatic here. The person who went and testified on behalf of IPED did not testify with the sanction and approval of the department. That person went there and testify for their own purposes, which they must explain. We have prepared a thorough and comprehensive response, which Mr. Sosoko will present to the Morani Commission. There's been generalizations and untruths from the person who went there without the approval of the department and from civil society. For example, statements like, you know, IPED is dysfunctional. Is a generalization. We're talking about Glebelands, where we're investigating only 4 of those cases of police brutality and abuse. IPED is not investigating the murders. SAPS does that. IPED is not involved in murders at Glebelands. It's got nothing to do with us. We investigate the police when complaints are against them. Unfortunately, it becomes fashionable when one person starts an attack and others jump on the gravy train. There is
clear collusion between that person from our office that went and speak and some of the NGOs on these matters. There's evidential proof of this collusion. So it's unfair on us and the good work we are doing to come to a conclusion on four cases. Out of the thousands of cases that IPED does, you come to the conclusion over four cases, two which are delayed for unforeseen circumstances which could not prevent it. And you come to the conclusion IPED is dysfunctional. Where we are wrong or weak, we'll acknowledge our problems. But to be subject to unfair attack is, I think people are really playing with lives and they are playing with important work that IPED has to do. Thank you.
Thank you for that, Idi. Mr. Mashlongu, and then Honorable Kola Bona follow-ups on that issue. Thank you. Members, let's just keep concise.
No, thanks, Chair. No, Jefferson, with regard to the bundle of information coming from that, what I wanted to find out is what form of an intervention, particularly with regard to investigators, can be done in order to harmonize some kind of trust. Particularly, my feeling with regard to the Cleveland situation, people have developed a sort of kind of high degree of mistrust of law enforcement agencies because of their complicity. This is what transpired even in our oversight by police to say, they are even investigating some of their own involved in the killing of people in Cleveland. That's what was said by the provincial acting commissioner there. Now, but what then one then noticed is the question of lack of trust from the side of complainants to communicate openly with IPED in that particular office. And I must also say that the social dynamics of that particular province, I wonder whether you have taken them into account because they are so vast. In fact, I tend to agree with King of the Zulus that to actually short-circuit this as political killings, when in fact the very same people who are killing people in Cleveland are said to be used outside there to commit these political matters, it's a narrow kind of a view because that hostel has become a serious boiling point in the whole province. So I would like to know maybe what kind of intervention from the side of you at a national level you can do to harmonize relations, particularly with regard to those that are investigating, and also the side of the complainants, taking into account this kind of polarization that exists there. Thanks.
Thank you, Mushlongu, and then Honorable Kola Barnard on the same issue, and then we can continue.
Yeah, same issue. I'm interested. The claim is made that a staff member went and spoke as a mouthpiece for the IPED without the IPED's permission. Is that person now facing a disciplinary full investigation with a view to applying sanctions? I mean, if that is the truth, and an investigation or disciplinary matter shows it to be the truth, then you don't need that person on your staff. So I'm interested if this is going the full process. Thank you.
Thank you, members. Let's get that responses and also then all the others that we can conclude round one. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think it's very unfortunate. Unfortunately, the employee concerned, it's not the first time that he has embarked on this kind of antics. It happened during the tenure, unfortunately, of our current Chairperson.
Oh, my God.
Where he also went out and cast dispersions with regard to the work that investigations done. And here is the point, is when these issues are raised, the person concerned, because he operates from a different unit altogether, so he does not understand what is happening in investigation, he's called to say, come, let's explain to you how the investigation works and how things were done in the way that they were done. The person concerned does not want to come through, instead goes outside, goes to the public protector, goes to media, now to the Moerane Commission, and says things that are factually incorrect. As an example, he goes to Moerane Commission and say, IPT has closed cases because an investigator was on leave, or because, no, an investigator was on study leave, or because he had to attend court and so forth. Now, he takes a spreadsheet, which is used in an investigation environment for information and statistical purposes, and misinterprets that. Now, you have that spreadsheet that talks to the reason in line with our regulations, which requires us to explain if a case was completed, for instance, after 90 days, why it was completed after 90 days. Now, that reason is flagged in that spreadsheet. He uses that reason as a reason why a case was completed, which is completely flawed, you know. So these are the things that, had he taken time to come to us, the custodian of the investigation, and to explain the spreadsheet to him, would have simply explained to him what that means. So there are a lot of issues that he says there that is effectually incorrect. The same way he did by misunderstanding, for instance, the manner in which we complete and close cases in 2012. So these are the issues that, as we said, that we have to go and put a proper perspective to the commission, because he has put out information out there which is factually incorrect. And with regard to the trust issue with the community, we don't have a trust issue with the community. We engage with the community in KZN because we also have community outreach programs that we do in that province. However, as I've indicated earlier, that with regard to the NGOs, some of the cases that they bring to us, if not most of them, they do not want us to have direct access to the complainants or the witnesses. So we have to go through them to get to these witnesses. And as I said, that is why it creates this kind of a problem. This is based on, as they allege, on the fact that they do not trust the police, you know, because the police may be complicit in some of these issues. But unfortunately, we're drawn into this, which is not a part of what concerns us.
So, Honourable Kaubana, is there a follow-up on that issue?
Yeah, I just wanted to know, is this person now facing a disciplinary hearing or not?
Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Kaubana. The response to that question is that at the moment we are seeking a legal opinion from external providers, because in terms of the disclosures that he made to the public protector, they are seen as protected disclosures. So we are seeking an opinion that would help us to make a decision in terms of what it is that he can be disciplined on, in terms of, for instance, some of the statements that he made that were not true, that might not be protected by the Act. Thank you.
Thank you. Can we maybe get all the other responses? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. With regard to the high-profile cases, Chairperson, first we must indicate that after the erstwhile Acting National Commissioner was removed, we have been able to get high-level satisfactory cooperation from the Office of General Mutiba in terms of getting information to be able to conduct these investigations we are doing. Linked to that, we met with the Inspector General of Intelligence and signed an MOU, which resulted in us having joint investigations on issues relating to crime intelligence. So
With regard to the Pashani matter, the investigation is still continuing. But as a result of this cooperation and out of our own investigation, it has now opened wide this investigation because we have never been able to obtain more evidence of allegations of corruption involving other service providers and transactions that also happen outside the country. So you find that payments are made in banks outside the country and then paid back into the country. So it's quite now a huge investigation with which it has gone now regional within SADC area where we have to follow up on those transactions. Now, as I speak, our team of investigators are meeting with the NPA and Asset Forfeiture Unit to map out a way forward in these investigations. And then we have also high-profile investigations in the crime intelligence environment involving generals also there, which we are busy with. We have also sent recommendations in with regard to these investigations, and criminal investigations are also continuing there. On the torture matters involving the General Mabula team in Northwest, the matter that we reported on, that the torture happened somewhere in 2010, between 2008 and 2010, and nothing had happened on those matters, whilst the decisions were made then that about seven members of that team were prosecuted. We've been pushing with the NPA on these matters, and we have recently got a decision to proceed against two of those members, and the matter will be going to court on the 27th of this month in Klerksdorp. There are other cases that involve the same members of that team, where they are with the Director of Public Prosecutions, where we are waiting a decision. And there is also a case of murder and torture involving the same team. And that investigation, we are waiting an expert report on handwriting. Once that is done, we should be able to hand over that matter to the NPA for decision. Other matters, for instance, the matter of cementing of SARS, we have long concluded that investigation. We sent the matter to the DPP on the 19th of April. We're still awaiting decision on that matter. There are other two matters of the former acting ED, Mr. Khamanyane, as well as others relating to Brigadier Korani of defeating the ends of justice and contempt of court and kidnapping. These matters are we got a decision not to prosecute, which we did not agree with. We have since written to the NTPP to review those decisions, and we are waiting a decision on those matters. Thank you.
Is that all the responses?
Thank you, Chairperson. There's just one response from me on the question from Honorable Mhlongo regarding the progress in the drafting of or the amendment of the IPED Act. As indicated by the Executive Director, IPED internally has finalized their amendments to the bill. What has happened is that we were now engaging with Civilian Secretariat. We had a session where we said on the week of the 28th to the 31st of August, but we had done quite a bit of work, but we still have some work that needs to be done before we can finalize between the two parties, but we are on track with the amendment of the bill. Thank you. Oh, the other question as well that was related was whether we have factored in
the fact that the Crown Court made a decision that IPED must be operationally and structurally independent. Yes, that has been factored in, Chairperson. Thank you.
Right, thank you very much for those responses. Let's go to round two. Two questions from my side, and then I'll start from that side, from Honourable Kola Barnard towards Ms. Moola. I just want to know, in terms of the state of financial position, I just want to know, the 25 vacancies, mm-hmm. are you going to wait to fill that until you get clarity on your additional funding, or are you going to keep those posts open, if we can just get an indication? And then secondly, with regard to the Farlam Commission recommendations, I think in a previous meeting, the ED indicated that due to financial constraints, the reconstruction of Scene 2 has been taken over by the NPA. I just want to get a synopsis. Where are you in terms of Farlam, in terms of the investigations and the recommendations to the NDPP? What is the overall picture? Honourable Kola Barnard.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. Just a question to Mr. McBride. I and a number of MPs were held back from entering Parliament this morning as a blue light cavalcade of some 10 vehicles entered. Could that possibly have been you and your team in a blue light cavalcade? Extraordinary that the people you are investigating would be the ones driving you, but, or is your life at threat? Have you had threats? Just a bit interested in finding out. You do know that blue light cavalcades are forbidden in the city, I'm sure. What is the current rental of the City Forum office? Now, that was occupied by you in September 2010, and back then the rental paid to the mysterious Rue Shibangu was 12 million rand a year. That was about 2012-13. Now, this was one of the contracts that got Becky Pele fired. Luckily, they managed to stop the Durban one within those couple of days they have in which they can do that. But this one, they're stuck with. And, of course, has made Rue Shibangu an extremely rich man because the rentals you pay bear no relation to equivalent buildings in the same area. So please, that one. All right, let's look at one of the programs. We're seeing higher than planned spending across pretty much all the programs, bar compliance monitoring and stakeholder management. But your spending on goods and services is 8.2 million rand higher than planned. And yet, as the chair mentioned, you know, you have your 25 short. Why on earth would you go that far ahead in goods and services when in fact you're 25 people short? Where is it going to, and how do you plug the holes in the dam here?
Thank you very much. Honourable Bele, remember this is the last round of this. Yes.
Thank you, Chair. I may have missed it, but I don't recall hearing a response from Mr. Sissoko on my question about slide 26. Up on the screen there, where the SAPS is giving comprehensive feedback, are we still having the same challenge of being told that a number of cases are a sort of no response, no feedback at all? And then it's obviously clear that for the short to medium term, the IPED is going to have to be in a situation of some very difficult trade-offs, given the funding constraints, budget pressures, no foreseeable prospects of reasonable increases or injections from Treasury, and I suspect SAPS isn't going to be the most cooperative or speedy partner in that regard. I think given the focus or emphasis on high-impact corruption cases, which I think is logical, that's going to mean a trade-off with effectiveness or speed on dealing with the assault cases, which we know are the bulk of the complaints IPED receives. And it's reflected, I think, in the indicators there's backlog there. But I think it's going to become more and more difficult to finalize those within the 90-day window. So in terms of the communication and stakeholder program, are you looking at having an intentional and conscious, call it expectation management with the public, to communicate honestly and fully that we want to do our best, we will do our best, but please understand ABC, we're not going to get to everybody in the way and at the speed that you would like and that we would like, so that you just don't, you try and minimize the gap between expectation and the ability to realistically meet those. I mean, I hear of cases, and I'm sure colleagues do, on a weekly basis, whether it's from social media or complaints that come directly to us about some or other alleged misconduct or criminality by the police. And that case, that incident is traumatic and very sensitive for that person. And so you at least want to give the person a sense of being taken into your confidence, but having the expectation managed that the process might not be as swift as they like, especially for vulnerable groups like women, LGBT, etc. When it's that kind of impact, you want to manage it properly. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Mhlongo. You covered. Thank you, Honourable Abatsi.
Thank you, Chairperson. Maybe let me start by commending your office in Gauteng for the good work they are doing. We had a protest in my area, and from the very first day they were on the ground and they were giving feedback and so on. That's really commendable. My question was also around the Falun Commission that the Chairperson took. My first question is, tell us about the frozen post in Program 3. What brings about this backlog in your cases? Yeah, thanks.
Thank you very much, Honourable Yukabet, Honourable Maki, Yukabet, Honourable Mula.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm covered with the question that the Honourable Engineer with the backlog. My second question, in slide 25, KwaZulu-Natal is 000 on the IP positive recommendation to SARS or MPS. Can you please give clarity of these 00?
Thank you very much, members. That's all the questions. Can we close? Thank you. Edie and your team, thank you. Final responses.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I'd like to deal with the issue of the blue light security detail. This matter IPED raised with the former police commissioner Piefa, because we saw it as an important matter. It's been under discussed and under debated because there are some objective real reasons for security in line with international best practices, but there's also abuse that is taking place, and there isn't a clear criteria as to who could make use of it under what conditions. We also raised it with civilian secretariat as an issue for the consultative forum to make recommendations, non-investigative recommendations, to minister as to how to deal with this matter, because we saw it as a major risk at some stage in the future. Unless we do it properly, there'll be an instance where there is a real threat and there's a real for good measure security detail using emergency police lights, and there isn't a real attack or something that's mistaken for an attack, and people will die because the public is not also sufficiently alerted to what is their response when they see it, what should they do, and what does it mean to have a emergency police light security detail. How should the public respond to it? You find very often public taking on, because of whatever abuses and resentments, taking on almost a vigilante approach and on occasion blocking the emergency police light security detail, which is a recipe for disaster. It depends on how people react. So we need to elaborate on it and have clear criteria as to who is allowed what and under what circumstances and under what supervision. So there needs to be a policy, set of criteria, and some SOPs related to that, because there is abuse. We are aware of that. In terms of death threats, we receive death threats all the time, and I receive death threats myself. My staff receive death threats, my investigators. It's a normal issue for us. We are taking the necessary precautions. We're upping our security and training for self-defense for our officials. So it's part of the job. We are in an environment where the subject of our investigations do not like the very idea of being investigated by somebody who they see as non-policeman or harassment. We are investigating them. They are not accustomed to being investigated. It's their culture not to be investigated. That they are on top of the investigation food chain and no one else can investigate them. So it's a culture which will have to wear down over time. When you are involved with the corruption involving hundreds of millions of rand, people are not going to let go of the ill-gotten gains very easy. So we expect some heat to come our way. So thanks.
Can we have other responses? Program one.
Okay. Thanks, Honorable Members and Honorable Chairperson. With regard to your question on 25 vacant positions, we have started with the recruitment process for all non-SMS positions. We are busy filling them. Some have been filled already. It's just that it doesn't fall within the reporting period that we are reporting on. However, with the four chief director positions, including the CFO and some provincial heads, there is that situation that we are trying to address in terms of the panel members and so on to assist us. The 9 million that XUCFO is talking about is a projected saving as a result, on compensation of employees as a result of those senior positions that are vacant. So it's a strategic decision to avoid the understanding under compensation of employees, yet we are pressured under goods and services. However, we will be able to fund going forward the positions. Regarding the situation, Honorable Kola Barnard, our building cost, we're supposed to be paying $1.1 million currently. However, the national payments, yes, but the National Treasury had given us an advice that due to the manner in which that building was allocated to us, DPW has to fund the gap between what we had projected to pay if we were occupying the structural building, which is 670,000. That's what we are paying, and DPW is paying the remainder of that 1.1 million.
Sorry, can I ask that figure to be repeated for me, please?
Yes.
You pay 670,000 per month,
and the DPW is paying the gap between the 1.1 million and that amount. Regarding the frozen positions in legal services, it's a director legal services that was frozen due to the ceiling that was placed by National Treasury on compensation of employees. So not that strategically that position was identified, because it was vacant at that time and there was this ceiling that we could not exceed on compensation of employees, as well as a number of secretaries and other positions. So in total we've got 35 positions currently that are frozen. We're supposed to be, in terms of approved structure, 423, however we are 388 due to the ceiling on compensation of employees.
Mr. Soko.
Thank you, Chairperson. With regard to the following Commission, Chairperson, we have on the 22nd of August, we have submitted the last investigative report that we have to the NPA. We had a meeting with them, regarding the issue of the reconstruction of scene 2 and the fact that we have not been given the funds to deal with that scene. Their approach and advice was that they will look at the investigations we have done so far with regards to that. And based on the available evidence, they will make a determination and advise the NDPP whether will they be able to make a decision whether to prosecute or not based on the available evidence, or will still there will still be a need to do the reconstruction. So they requested that we give them some time to go through all the documents that we submitted to them. So basically all the different investigations, including the Kenta, the matters of the state teams and all that, they've been submitted to them. They are busy looking into all those matters. Then they will advise us after they've gone through that how they decide to move forward on the final measure. With regard to slide 26, Honorable Mbele, we continue to have engagement with the SAPS on the issues of recommendations. I must say, though, that it's still not satisfactory, hence you see the issue of matters still awaiting initiations and so forth. So whilst there's been some significant progress on their part in terms of their responses, but there are still challenges in terms of getting a quicker response, especially in line with their own regulations. So we're still working on that. We're hoping that we will be able to change the situation in that regard. With regard to communicating the issues of our reprioritization in terms of investigation, especially on the assault matters and so forth, what we are doing is that we communicate directly with the victims of the crime themselves to say how far we are with the investigation, even the delay in terms of the investigation. Our position is that we must always communicate continuously so that even if there are delays, our stakeholders understand these delays. Because of budget constraints, you would have realized that we've even cut on our community outreach programs to an extent that we are not able to communicate directly with as many stakeholders as we should. However, on a one-to-one basis, on those that are affected by the case that we investigate, we certainly try to communicate that. And then the issue of the backlogs. As we've indicated that because of these budgetary constraints and we had to reprioritize our investigation, invariably that creates backlogs, because backlogs are all these matters that come from the previous financial years, and when we move into the new financial year, they become backlogs. So because of reprioritization, then you find that we now have more backlog cases than we initially have. So we also have a strategy to try and deal with those backlogs whilst at the same time still trying to work on the matters that we prioritized. On slide 25, where there are no positive recommendations with regard to KZN, Chairperson members, this has to do with the office having not submitted the positive recommendation for consolidation at national office when we report on our quarterly report. So that is why there's no reflection. You will see in our next quarterly report that there will be a number of cases that will come from that province, because it will only be done in the second quarter. So the issue has been taken up with that province in terms of the lapse in terms of reporting on those matters. Thank you, Chairperson.
That's all the responses. Thank you very much, honourable members. Thank you very much to the Executive Director and IPET on the first quarter. Maybe just to indicate that the second quarter's hearing will be held on the 7th of November. And then, very importantly, we've got a very
let's say, tight schedule for the annual reports, and IPEDS will appear before the committee on Wednesday, the 4th of October. But we will want to also maybe urge all departments with the Secretary of Police here to table as soon as possible, but also if there is, for instance, a signed-off copy available before tabling, to make that available to the researchers and staff so that we can start the process, because we've got very tight deadlines this year. So we take note of the progress of IPED. Importantly, vacancies should be filled. Also, the position of CFO. I think more should be done to get the panel together and fill that position. It's a strategic position. We take note of the high-profile cases, and we also await progress on Farlam at the next meeting. And then, very importantly also, I think it's quite evident that discussions with Treasury for the next three-year cycle will have to, you know, that's a matter I think we won't exhaust today, but from the Portfolio Committee side, it's quite important that IPED must have the financial muscle to deal its work specifically effectively. So we'll also discuss that going forward. Yes, Honourable Member?
Just a thought, Chair. Perhaps it's time we call the Treasury here again. I don't believe they've been in front of us for some time, but there are a number of questions coming up that I think they need to answer. Thank you.
Right, thank you very much. Members, we will take a 10-minute tea break, and then we will have the Secretary of Police and his team. Thank you very much, members, for your cooperation. Thank you.
Sorry, how are you? Are you well? Did you say my regards to the
Good luck with you guys.
Okay. Thank you, brother.
Look at that.
I think I'm still waiting for the mess, so when I did your runway,
Oh, we go to the hot seat. I thought we occupy the back seat throughout.
Yeah. Nee, wat. Ja.
It's like an oven in here. Okay, now what's happening now? What have you done? I'm trying. Angel Bishan, she's sending me little notes. I'm cold now. I just That's why I'm standing. Angel keeps sending me notes. I'm cold now. I'm hot now. No. We'll see how hot it is now. So I've put it on. It was on 22, which is too hot in here. So now I've tried 20, but I'll show you. Angie won't be shouting. I'm too cold. Put it up now. Put it down now. Put it up now.
Right, thank you very much, Honourable Members, for coming back. We appreciate it. Thank you and welcome to the Civilian Secretariat. I'm going to first ask Mr. Rapia to introduce his delegation and then I'll ask the Honourable Members to introduce themselves. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. My name is Alvin Pumuzo Rapia, Secretary for Police. With me is Mr. Tumelo Nkonjwane, who is the Chief Financial Officer, and Mr. Velem Basson, who is the Head of Strategic Planning, and Mr. Sam Mahote, who is our Parliamentary Liaison Officer. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think we must compliment you keeping your delegation small. It's important in terms of financial, you know, expenditure that we constrains and that you are doing saving measures. That's very good. We welcome that. I'll start from Honourable Mula.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning. My name is Phindile Mola, a member of this committee, I think.
Thank you. I'm a pleasure to have a member.
Tumelang bagaetsho, halang kutlwelela ebile. Dumelang bagaetsho. Lena la ka ke nna Angie Molebatsi ke leloko la committee e ka lo leboga.
Thank you, Chairperson. Again, good morning. My name is Akhele Mpele, member of the committee.
And I'm Diane Kohler-Barnard, member of the committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Members. Without further ado, Mr. Secretary, Mr. Rapia, you're welcome to go ahead with the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. I am here to table the first quarter report for 2017-18. I will just deal with the background, and Mr. Basson will take us through the different programs, and the Chief Financial Officer will take us through the finances. The report covers the period April 2017 to June 2017, and it deals with the following areas: the service delivery environment, organizational environment, and the breakdown of expenditure during the first quarter of 2017-18. I just want to indicate that during this first quarter, we had a change of leadership. Minister Mbalula and Deputy Minister Mkongi were appointed on the 1st of April 2017. And during this period, there was a major spike in terms of crime against women and children in the country in the first quarter. And the last 3 months, those 3 months that we are reporting on, the Civilian Secretariat and the South African Police Service were on the ground to tackle the scourge of this crime and violence. And the minister and the deputy minister engaged communities in Soshanguve, Lusikisiki, Butsabelo, Elsie's Reef River, Klephart, Mtata, Zwelitsha, Umlazi, Gleblands, Guadabegwa, Winterfeld, Fort Beaufort, amongst others, as part of the 100 days program, as indicate that the change in leadership actually made us to focus on this 100 day program. And you will see in terms of some of the performance that some of the targets were not met, because the minister wanted to understand what is going on in the portfolio and wanted us to support him for that first 3 months. He initiated specialized police crime prevention operations, and they were unannounced visits that were done to poor performing police stations which were undertaken by the minister. And in terms of the organizational environment, I'm sure honorable members, the last time we came here when we were presenting our fourth quarter report, and we indicated that we were not doing well in terms of filling of vacancies, but we put a lot of pressure and we filled 140 of the 150 posts during this period, and this resulted in a vacancy rate of 6.7%. And regarding the employment equity, out of 140 employees currently employed at the Secretariat, 76 are female, while 64 are males, which translate to 54% females and 46 males, respectively. I will now hand over to Mr. Basson to take us through the program performance.
Thank you, Chairperson. In terms of our performance indicators for the program one, and the sub-program 1.1 department management, we were supposed to have a consultative IPET secretariat forum, and that did not take place. It must postpone for the second quarter. Quarterly performance reports, there was one as a target and we achieved the one. Corporate services, for the first quarter we had to reduce our vacancy rate to 10%, 20% in the first quarter, and it went down to 6.7. The filling of vacancies was prioritized due to the under expenditure COE budget in the previous year, and management had to clear the diaries to schedule interviews, and during the period there were a few resignations. Finance, the percentage of payments made to creditors within 30 days, the target was 92, we've reached 90%. The department could only achieve 90% between April and May. Percentage of internal audit recommendations, the target was 60, we've achieved 63%. Percentage of external audit recommendations, the target was 60, we achieved 89% out of the 27 audit findings, 24 were resolved or implemented. The percentage expenditure in relation to the budget allocated, the target was 20%. We've done at least 19%. The department underspends mainly on goods and services due to delay in the implementation of activities. Program 2, intersectoral coordination and strategic partnerships. The key achievements there was that the minister's 100 days program was kicked off with the loans in Gauteng on 12 May in Soshanguve. A number of Isimbizo, amongst others in Beaufort, Fort Beaufort, Mtata, Otisusulu, University, Batsobelo, Elsie's River, and Lusikisiki took place. the handing over of two mobile police stations were part of activities in Mthatha and Elsie River. Public participation events were held in Mthaduli police stations, visits by Ministry at Mlazi and Kwadabeka in KZN. To continue with intersectoral coordination, Izimbizo public participation held with communities to promote safety. We were supposed to have one, but due to the Minister's 100 days program, nine was achieved, and the total number of provinces implementing CPF guidelines was supposed to be two, but no achievement there. And then the number of provincial capacity building sessions held in crime prevention programs, there was supposed to be two, and none was held due to the unavailability of stakeholders, and the number of community safety forums established. The target was five, but only three was established due to the unavailability of all stakeholders. Program 3, Legislation and Policy Development. 3.1, subprogram 3.1, the key achievements there were concept, note, and methodology of the joint research project with provincial secretaries on the demilitarization of subs Vispol was finalized and approved. Terms of reference and gap analysis for research project on the state of policing in South Africa were developed and approved. A draft MOU for the implementation of 2016 White Paper on Policing was developed with GTEC. A joint task team was established compromising of the Secretariat, SUPS, IPET, SALGA, and the Municipal Police Service will be key in the implementation of the Single Police Service model. IGA assessment of implementation of the 2016 White Paper on Safety and Security was finalized and findings were presented to the Steering Committee. Safer Space Portal was officially handed over to the Secretariat following the completion of training facilitated by GIZ. Subprogram 3.1, continue policy and research in terms of the targets. There were no targets in quarter one. In legislation, the same. There were no targets in quarter one, but the key achievements were the technical drafting of the Firearms Control Amendment Bill is completed, and the draft Criminal Law Forensics Procedures Bill was approved by the Minister for further consultation. So there was no particular targets for quarter one. Sovereign Oversight Program 4, Monitoring and Evaluation. Nine national monitoring tool oversight visits were conducted. In terms of the targets, the number of police and oversight visits was supposed to be 5 but 1, but 9 was conducted. That was also due, but the target also exceeded due to the Minister's 100 days program. And the performance program looked as this in terms of percentages. And the following slide is per program. I'll hand over to the CFO. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members, secretary, colleagues, and all protocol observed. I'll be presenting the finance at the end of June. As the department, we have an appropriate budget of 124.7 million, of which by the end of June, we are seeing that 23.1 million had been spent, which translates into 18.6%. Looking at the different programs, you'll see that on the lower spending program is monitoring and evaluation. Moving on to economic classification. As the department within the economic classification, for compensation of employees, we have a budget of 88.8 million, of which by the end of June we had spent 19.1 million. Goods and services, we had a budget of 34.1 million, of which we spent about 3.9 million. The compensation of employees therefore translates into 21.5%, whilst goods and services translates into 11.5%. As the secretary has indicated, on particularly on goods and services, we had to delay some of the program in focus of the ministerial program. So, and also wanting to review what is it that we'll have to take forward. In terms of payments for capital assets, we were hoping to have received all our additional staff, but by the end of the first quarter, not all of them were appointed, and therefore only 104 out of the 1.5 million was spent, which translates into 6.5%. The following slide is about just focus on compensation of employees. You can see that almost all the programs spend around 20% of their compensation of employees, which is not far from the projected amount that we had planned as a department. Goods and services. The goods and services, we've said that of the 34.1% that was allocated for the goods and services, we had spent about 3.9 million, which translates into 11.5%. The highest spending program there, as you can see, it was administration, which spent about 22.2%. The spending in that program relates, although some progress might have been postponed, most of the expenditure that lies there, some of them will be contractual obligations, which, irrespective of whether the department decides to delay some of the activities, the contractual obligations still continue to be spent. And the other programs, intersectoral coordination and strategic partnership reflects the highest among the core functions because it relates to the whole program of the ministerial program that had to be initiated. And the other programs, the other two programs, there was a...
CFO, just a moment. Just hold your horses. Honorable,
I don't know, maybe it's me who's getting confused. Most of the things that are there are not here.
Can you maybe just address that query?
Chairperson, I think the last column is not here.
Part of the printed version, so maybe we can maybe ask the secretariat to make us updated the copy available. That's the only thing we can do now. But please continue.
Thank you, Chair. So I'm sorry for that inconvenience that the last column is not there. I think most of the information comes from the last column. So I'll then move, just finish with goods and services. I'll prefer to move on to transfers. In terms of transfers, we are supposed to be registered with the SASITA, which has not yet been finalized. Therefore, there's no transfer that took place within the department as yet. Goods and services. A payment for capital assets, as I've indicated. Most of that expenditure relates to the working tools for the anticipated new staff and maybe any other obsolete tools that were supposed to be bought. So as yet, we've only spent about 104 of the 1.5 million, which translates into a 6.5%. Trying to explain the graph on slide 35, you will note that actually the department is using, you'll know that the department hasn't yet fully implemented their financial systems, so which include logis. Now, what happened during the first, in April, there was a move from the old BES version 4 to a new BES, which is version 5. Then, because we don't have the full we have not yet fully implemented the financial system, so the interface between the new BES and the system that existed was not in order at the end of the first quarter because it was the time that when it was implemented. Then by May, the whole thing was fixed, and that is why then we reflect higher than expected expenditure in May, which actually includes the expenditure that was which was supposed to fall in April. So, but you can see then going forward from there, you can see that our expenditure is relatively lower than the projected drawings that the department hopes to achieve because of some which is clear in explaining the following as such. So we are saying that as a department we have spent 18.6% of the total budget, which when you look it against the cash flow that we had anticipated that we want to receive, it's actually an underspending of 5.3 million. And as I've said, this relates to the fact that some programs had to be delayed and then there were some few vacancies that were still there in the department. Moving on to the next slide on issues relating to compensation of employees. Again, there's no expenditure there because this relates to the fact that the pay progression or the pay increment for the SMS members has not been effected by the end of the first quarter, which has just been recently approved. So that underspend, that low spending there relates to those monies that were not paid to the increment for the SMS members, but also due to some vacant posts that were not filled by the end of the financial year, but by the end of the first quarter. And I think most of this I've already reflected on it to the low spending on goods and services, and I think that will be it for me, Chair.
Is that the presentation? Right, thank you very much, members. Let's go to Honorable Mula.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for your presentation. But my presentation doesn't have numbers as yours. My first question is on sub-program 1, Department Management. You said the target of the meeting was 1, and you didn't see it. The meeting was postponed. Why was the meeting postponed, and when will we be sitting in the next second quarter? Because you said in the next second quarter, is it the July or August or when? And do you have schedules for your meetings? My second one is on, I don't have, It's program 2, intersectoral coordination and strategic partnership. No reports received from provinces. The total number of provinces implementing of community police forum guidelines. What was the reasons for the provinces not implementing the CPF guidelines, and what steps were taken? My third question is on program 2 again. Number of provincial capacity building sessions held on crime prevention programs. You said here unavailability of stakeholders. What do you mean? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Mula. Honorable Marke.
Thank you, Chairperson. My first question is the one that has been asked by Honorable Mona on unavailability of stakeholders. What does that mean? The second question would be on organizational environment. Well, it's just a request. The percentages which translate to 54% females and 46% males respectively. I think next time we must be told even the levels, because the 54% might be cleaners and clerks or something, and as it is, it doesn't tell us anything. We must know the levels. The higher levels might all be male or whatever. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Marke, Honorable Abidjan, Honorable Molobatsi.
Thank you, Chair. Why were there no targets for policy development and research the first quarter? A second one, on slide 12, no reports received from provinces. Why was this, and what will happen? What's the recourse? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Molobatsi. Honorable Shlongo.
No, thanks, Chair. Under sub-program 1.2, I would like to know whether then you do have now the workplace skills plan, and if yes, then as to what could be then the reason that in terms of your targets in the first quarter, there could be no indicator as to the outcome of that. Secondly, Chairperson, is the question of under Program 2, intersectoral coordination and strategic partnership, that there were no reports from provinces. I think I am a bit touched by this question of no reports from provinces, particularly because the recent visit to KZN, I think when we were in Kwanongoma, there was this indication that there is this kind of an organization which is said to be competing against CPF there in the crime fighting. And seemingly there was a kind of agreement with the civilian secretariat with the methodology used by these people, despite the fact that they don't appear to be actually then adhering to the rule of law that much, because they use a lot of torture to people and all that. So whether how can you then improve on that so that we can have a kind of a feel in those areas, because I think as I raised that, even only if civilian secretariat in the province can actually then agree with an organization that operates outside of a regulated environment against a statutory body like CPF, then that means there is a problem somewhere there. Then lastly, is the question of your under discussion one, whereby then you are indicating that part of your under among all the programs, the relative underspending ranges, then, and that is based on monitoring and evaluation. And I think, don't you take this as a serious concern, because part of your task will be to ensure that all your or whatever form of legislation and rules of engagement that you have laid are actually then abided with, particularly by those that are supposed to receive services from. If then you have got this kind of underspending there, how would you then recommend to correct this in the future, so that we can actually have an effective monitoring and evaluation of strong adherence to the policy direction that we are giving, particularly to SAPS. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Honorable Shlongu. Honorable Bele.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just three quick questions. On slide, I actually can't see the number on my thing, because the right of the page is blurred out. But it refers to the question asked by, I think, Honorable Make, with the title Organizational Environment. Looks like it's about slide 1, 2, 3, I think. Yeah, 4. Because when I first read the first bullet point, which said that 140 of 150 vacant posts were filled, I thought there were 150 vacant posts and 140 of those were filled. But the second bullet point then says the total number is 140. So, I mean, there must have been fewer than 150 vacant. So can I just check, what was the baseline or the number of vacant posts at the beginning of the financial year, and therefore how many were filled to get to 140 by the end of the first quarter, just to get the number of the actual posts that were filled in the first quarter, and linked to that, in which program were the bulk of those posts that were then filled in the first program, first quarter. Second question is just for a brief update, progress update on the development and finalization of the complaints management system within the secretariats. I remember the commission received a report, I think it was last year, under the former acting secretary, but just to get a sense of how far that has gone, because that's been a somewhat neglected aspect of the secretariat's work, is receiving, processing, and finalizing service complaints from the public. And then my third question relates to the slide. I'm afraid I can't tell you the number either, but it's the slide entitled Key Achievements, just before the target reporting on sub-program 3.1. The fourth bullet point refers to the intergovernmental relations assessments for the implementation of the white paper on safety and security. I'm assuming that means that there was feedback solicited from other spheres of government concerning the white paper. I'm just wondering if there are any highlights that can be brought to the committee's attention from other provinces and local governments in relation to the IGR picture when they were asked for their feedback. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Bailey. Honourable Colonel Barnard.
Thank you, Chair. Can you tell us why it was that you postponed the consultative forum meeting with the IPID? Now, that is a legislative requirement. It was established, or this was actually set up by this committee because of the intervention of this committee, and those meetings should not be postponed. It plays an absolutely critical role. So tell us why, tell us when the meeting then will be held. It can't be beyond the wit of man to set up a meeting. And then looking at policy development and research, doesn't seem to have any targets for quarter one. Now, the Secretariat aims to submit three policies on policing to the Minister for approval by the end of 17-18, with the first one due in the second quarter. So that's due in a few days' time. The Secretariat really needs to tell us whether the targets will be met and provide detail on the policy that will be, what are these policies, what's it about, tell us what's happening there. And finally, equally so, the Secretariat's annual target for bills submitted to the Minister for approval is four, with two before the end of the second quarter, one bill in the third and one bill in the fourth. Now, the Secretariat underperformed significantly in terms of legislation annual targets in the previous two financial years. How are you going to pull up your socks in this regard? What's the lead-in time for the consultation process? And was that factored in terms of the management of performance for the current financial year?
Thank you, members. Two questions from my side. I just want to ascertain from the Secretary, in terms of the three institutions, IPID, SAPS, and the Civilian Secretariat, is envisaged that the Secretariat plays an oversight role. Now, of course, you are still, in a certain sense, divorcing yourself from SAPS in terms of systems, financial system support, even location. Can the Secretary maybe indicate when do we think will be the Civilian Secretariat in a position to fulfill that role fully as per the legislation? I know there's capacity constraints and staffing, but I mean there's also investigation I think being done by public service or to revamp your structure. If we maybe can just get a progress report with regard to that. Then I think judging from your report, also the feedback that we received during the DVA hearings,
The Portfolio Committee's view is the Secretariat must play a coordination role, it must play a leading role between the provinces as well as the different institutions. Now, it's clearly from the report so far that there is a bit of a, let's say, shortening of that mandate. So can we maybe get a view, how is the Secretariat going to ensure that it plays that leading role and not be determined by other institutions who are not available or excuses or whatever? The Secretariat must lead. Can we just maybe get your perspective? Thank you, Secretary.
Thank you, Honourable Members, Honourable Chair. I'll start with the question raised by Honourable Muller and Honourable Kola Banan regarding the consultative forum with IPID. One of the reasons, and as I indicated in the introduction, with the new minister coming in, it actually put our program off a balance. We had already scheduled meetings with IPID, but they had to be postponed. One of the reasons for postponing the meeting was that the core person who is dealing with issues of the police conduct on our side was very much involved working with the Deputy Minister on the 100-day program. So the issue of readiness was also a point, because we had an agreement with the Executive Director. We don't just want to meet for the sake of meeting. We'll need to meet and make sure that the discussions that we'll have, there will be proper action plan that needs to be taken. So we agreed that we will need to postpone that meeting to be held in the next quarter, and it's going to be this quarter. What we did was we met, but the focus, we said the first issue is let's deal with the issue of the legislation, have it out of our way so that we have a common agreement in terms of what are the amendments. And the next meeting is going to take place at the end of this this month, and it will deal with issues of the first quarter and the second quarter. The next question is the issue of the capacity building. What does it mean by unavailability of stakeholders? The capacity building that we are doing is for provinces. It deals with issues which we would present regarding our regulations, the policies that we have developed so that the provinces can understand them, so that provinces understand their role, including even SAPS members who come to these workshops. The availability of members is that when we set the workshops in the first quarter, we couldn't get enough numbers in the province for people to come and participate, and we couldn't present them. But I must indicate that the capacity building program has now started in the second quarter in earnest, and we're getting full participation from provinces. Honourable Mark raised a question about the issue of the breakdown of the staff that we need to give details. Yes, we will in the next presentation we will provide the breakdown in terms of levels, so that they can see the picture properly. And we agree that if it's just raised like that, it could be that most of the people that are women, they are in the lower levels, and the rest are men in the higher levels. So we'll provide that in the next presentation. And actually, even in our annual report that we will be presenting, it does include the specific breakdown in terms of the levels, but we'll make sure that in our presentation, the quarterly presentation, that information is provided.
the question raised by Honorable Mlibatsi on slide 12. Just want to go to. It's also linked to the question that was being posed, was the capacity building workshops. I've answered that. The workplace skills plan, we have the workplace skills plan, which we submit to the Department of Higher Education every year. So that has been pre-submitted at the beginning of the year. So that's why it's not reflecting in the first quarter, because it was already been reported on. The issue of the Honorable Mtlong, the organization in KZN, I will need to get details regarding this organization. Obviously, that organization doesn't have an agreement with us as the civilian secretariat, mm-hmm. and we'll have to investigate with the province about that organization. And if Honorable Mtlong, you can give me the details, then I will follow up on that. The expenditure in terms of MME, it's not a serious concern to us, taking into consideration that first quarter, MME was pulled in because Minister wanted upfront when he goes to police stations, when he goes to provinces, he needed proper MME reports done, which they done quite well. There was the report about the DVA, which was not finished, but that DVA report we actually have finished it. So the expenditure of MME is actually picking up. They are now finalizing the issue about the customer satisfaction survey, which in the first quarter we actually had to say, don't go ahead and deal with that, and that had an impact in terms of their spending, and that is picking up. They are now analyzing the information in terms of the customer service satisfaction survey, so they are picking up in terms of the work that they are doing, and I think in this quarter's report we will see a huge improvement in terms of the expenditure. The slide on the issue of the post. Actually, it's not 150 vacant posts. It's 140 of the 150 posts that we have. During this period, we filled. I don't have the details in terms of areas. But during this period, we filled about 15 vacant positions. So at the time that we came here in the last quarter, I think we had vacancies. I can't remember what was the number, but I know the number is 15. But we can provide the details in terms of the breakdown of those positions. The complaints management system, we were in the process of finalizing that, but the major problem is we have to move building. The building where we are on a month-to-month basis, and this is a constraint that we have with issue of IT. We are on a month-to-month basis. We've actually even finalized our corporate governance of ICT framework, which will be approved this quarter. But implementing that framework, and when you're moving into a building, because you have to put in tubing and all those things, it becomes a problem. It will become a waste of money, because that system, it needs to be housed somewhere. So we have put that on hold, and I reported last time that the minister, when we're talking about the move of the building, indicated that we need to prioritize the issue of the restructuring of the organization. The work has been done with DPSA. We are in the first phase now. We've given the report to the minister in terms of how far we are, so that these things run parallel. And we are hoping that minister will actually now approve that we go ahead with the move to another building. There's a building that has been identified by Public Works, which is we're going to be accommodated in the same building as Arts and Culture. It's next to the High Court in Pretoria. So those discussions are happening, but we need minister to approve to say now you can move, because I'm seeing progress in terms of the issue about the organizational structure and restructuring. Regarding policy development, the targets, the policy that has already been approved this quarter. Minister approved the policy on reducing barriers to reporting sexual offenses and sexual crimes. So that has been for the second quarter that has been achieved, and there are other policies that we are busy finalizing. The issue of the bills, in the opening slide I've already indicated which bills Minister has approved for consultation. The issue of the firearms control amendment bill that we have already submitted to the minister. The bill around the issue of the buccal samples. Let me just go. The draft criminal law bill, the forensic procedures. The one that says we need to take buccal samples for Schedule 8 offenders, so that we put that has already been presented to Minister and they approved that we can go through the consultation process. IPED has already reported that we are busy finalizing the amendment bill for IPED. So in terms of what we have, the SEPs issue, as I also reported yesterday, the SEPs amendment bill, we hope that we'll be able to have this draft by the end of the year. That's why we're getting a service provider to assist us with that. When will the Secretariat be able to fulfill its mandate, Honorable Chair? If we get our structure approved and funded, we will be able to do more than what we are doing currently. We believe that we are doing the minimum of what we are supposed to do, but I think by the next year, 2018-19. We should come comfortable and say we are doing all our, by the end of 18-19, that we are fulfilling all our responsibilities. It's very difficult when you are working as the head of the department and all the people that are reporting to you, the chief directors, you have to check every thing that comes through. It takes a lot of time. We, in some cases, we don't have the numbers. As I reported yesterday, for instance, in legislation, we don't have enough members to deal with the issues of the legislation. We don't have. We have a role to support the minister in his international responsibilities, which we are currently not fulfilling. And we don't have any unit that actually deals with that. If there's international responsibilities that the minister needs to undertake and he wants us to support him, we usually use our policy and research unit, which is not ideal.
And with the capacity building that we are having in provinces, especially the regulations that we have, which were promulgated, that capacity building will actually give provinces the ability to actually get proper clarity in terms of the work that they are supposed to do. And we believe that with that we will improve our role in fulfilling our mandate. The issue of leading role regarding the DVA, we take that responsibility. And in terms of the gender-based violence, there's a lot of, even in JCPS, other teams that have been established. And we are now engaging, we had a discussion with the Department of Women also. The issue is we need to actually take the coordination role. And with the report that we will be presenting to you, it will also indicate how we are going to fulfill that role. But taking that role with the capacity that we have, it might mean that we might find ourselves stretching ourselves too much. So we might have to come and do over a period of time, not saying we will take over everything, bit by bit, until we have enough capacity to actually can...